Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this, welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody that is hopefully for somebody. My name is Kyle Naranya, and welcome to episode 186. Two episodes this week, listeners. You are very lucky because I am fortunate enough to have seen all of Wonder Man, but I couldn't review a Marvel thing all alone, and longtime listeners of the podcast will know that I've brought on my good friend from ScreenRant.com. Rob Keyes is back on the show.
You woke me up from my slumber. Hey, you. Let me say something. You always say, you know, from no one for someone. Sort of that's your theme. That's your intro. Yes. But before the show, you just went on telling me you have 200 plus episodes or whatever. Insane.
We're getting there. 200 is soon. 200 is soon.
Wait, what are we at? What's the number?
186.
Okay. Well. That's all. Come on, it'll be like episode 300. the way I've been available lately, but still a commendable run. We should celebrate the 200th with something special, like you did for your 100th, right?
I did do. Yes, 100 was awesome. It lined up with Deadpool and Wolverine and Comic-Con. And If you're following Film Realist on any of the socials, would have seen the lovely video that you recorded in the bar, the Borderlands bar. Maybe The best thing about that movie was their Comic-Con setup.
Maybe the only good. Yeah.
Yes, that's fair. So yeah, it's moved because there's been special bonus episodes. Those I don't count for the numbers, but something like this. I know we have differing opinions on release schedules of stuff, but I think we'll probably agree on Wonder Man. But I don't like midweek television releases because they really do screw up the podcast schedule. But thankfully, we have already seen all of Wonder Man. So by the time you're listening to this, all 8 episodes will have been released. They're releasing all on January 27th. So full spoilers, you have been warned. Let's get into, I guess it's a Marvel Spotlight series as opposed to that. So the second thing released under that banner, the other was Werewolf by Night. Spoilers are incoming. You have been warned.
First of all, I always dug your performance as the Mandarin. But I remember you from that omnibus episode you did in the 70s. You played Edgar Allan Poe, The Need for Nightmare.
Well, well, well. Not too many people remember that old gem, including me. How was I?
We were talking before we started recording, Rob, that this has been a long time coming, this series, with strikes and delays and all of the different things shifting around at the MCU, now getting dumped all at once. I know you love binging things. I happen to have watched all 8 episodes over the span of 2 days. What did you overall think of Wonder Man?
Yes, I also watched all 8 episodes over 2 days, and it was such a wonderful experience, especially given what this show is. And we should also preface the obvious, like the timing of this is very unfortunate. The show would have benefited so much had it released during a peak or the prime of the MCU versus when the MCU, its relevance in the zeitgeist is potentially, I mean, I would argue at an all-time low. I think all 3 MCU films last year were forgettable and all under-delivered, both in terms of quality and box office revenue, and certainly in affiliate licensing revenue for the company. You know, it's all trends are pointing down. Hence the need for what they're doing with the Avengers. We could talk about that another day. But yeah, because this show is actually of the highest quality from MCU on Disney Plus. I was thinking before I came on in my head, just running back through all the shows, and I would consider, and this is no surprise to you since we've had this conversation at many points during the MCU on Disney Plus experiment, I think the whole thing has been largely a failure because it hurt the brand. And mm-hmm. The Disney and Marvel have taught audiences that, hey, you don't actually have to watch these shows because most of these characters just don't seem to return. And if you do happen to
spoilers for a short that might be coming out in the near future, this character will return. Will they?
Yeah. There's all those funny memes on social media of like all these characters that show up at the, like Star Fox played by Harry Styles, or is Blade ever going to happen? You know what I mean? All these things that just never go anywhere. The Skrulls, we don't have to talk about. But yeah, so Marvel and Disney have taught audiences that even if you do invest in these shows, they may go nowhere, or they may not be high quality. And it's a shame because I think what I guess it's Andrew Guest is the showrunner on this one, and he comes from, he's got this amazing comedic sensibility because he worked on, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Community, 30 Rock. So think of those writers' rooms where you work with Tina Fey, and it's just like the best of the best. And Wonder Man is very comedic, and one of its lead stars is Trevor Slattery, whose introduction was a comedic gimmick that, you know, fell flat for many audiences, and they brought him back as sort of a gimmick, nostalgia bait, familiar face in Shang-Chi. And then I would consider this to be sort of the conclusion of his redemption arc. I actually thought Trevor Slattery was very well utilized, and that's because you have Sir Ben Kingsley eating up screen time as this very wild character who has so much like lived in experience, which does fit in the MCU, strangely enough, given his experiences. So a well-played card to bring that full circle. I love how over, you give it enough time and Marvel somehow redeems these like debatable mistakes of the past. And of course, you and I can geek out over Destin Daniel Cretton directing the beginnings of this. We you and I both love Shang-Chi. I think that's, did we see that together? Is that the one we came?
We did see that together. Yes, we did.
What an amazing experience. I wish, you know, I would love to see that and sequels on the big screen. Immediately, it never happened, unfortunately. But yeah, so there's the comedic element. There's also this, the way it's shot feels so, this is a show that would fly if it was an Apple and HBO. And this is a show that does not need the Marvel connections at all. There's sort of only two real reasons to have it. And it's to set up the motivation for one character and give the other character a reason to kind of like be, it serves as an obstacle of sorts for the other character. And there are creative ways to write around that. You could have, we're saving spoilers for later. Is that how this works?
No, full spoilers. Full spoilers.
Oh, yeah. You could just write in a criminal background to two different characters and two different, you know, implications with their history. And then you could tell the same story. Just, this show does not need Marvel.
No.
Marvel, oddly enough, needs the show, except it's too late. You buried it. And that's why they're dropping all eight episodes. And that's why, despite having creative marketing, it doesn't work anymore because people don't care. they know better.
They don't.
And it's a shame. And I do wonder if Simon Williams will return. If he does, I feel like he's just going to be a guest here and there, and maybe that's okay. But this show is quite standalone in that way. You can watch it, and this could be the end of it, and that's fine. It kind of works. It would totally work as a film as well. I feel the same way about A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. It's high quality. It's lighter tone. It's packaged in six episodes in that case, but they're not super long. You could tool this and edit it into a film, and it would be a high quality character piece that feels real. It feels like, it's weird. This is a small show that's bigger than you think, but doesn't require the extensive SFX budgets, and there's no supernatural and sci-fi elements. You don't need any of that. It's just pure character driven in this tale of you know, two buddies trying to make it in Hollywood, or make it and remake it in Hollywood. And it's quite beautiful. And the concerns I had going in of how they would handle the modern Wonder Man of it all doesn't really factor in. And the other I forget his name, the in-show director who's working on the Wonder Man project,
Von Kovac.
Yes, he looked
played by a former dictator in the Superman film.
Yes, and to be honest, I almost have the same feeling in both projects. I feel like he's just too over the top. He definitely
that guy's
has a look.
At an 11 the whole time, doesn't matter what he's playing.
And part of me is like, oh, that's the only part that doesn't fit, even though it's kind of a comedy. But also, when I watch things like The Studio, which shares a lot of resembling, you know, plot devices and character tropes, I suppose, there are people in Hollywood like that. That is kind of how some of this is. And you hear these stories. So, yeah, a brilliant character piece. It's really, really fun. But it's also, as much as I'd love it and would rate it high, it's also not like a must-see right now. Because there's like six big shows on right now. You know what I mean? I mentioned A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms on HBO, but there's also a Pit, right? There's also Fallout finishing up. And you got things like
Shrinking
on Netflix.
Starts this week.
Shrink comes up. And even if you like more poppy stuff, you have like The Night Agent coming up on Netflix. So there's a lot of programming right now where Marvel is and what the show is about. You don't have to see it right now, but I do give it the highest of recommendation.
Yeah, you touched on so many things that were so hard to talk about in my non-spoiler thoughts. And obviously the Chinese orange elephant in the room, or the Mandarin, is the Trevor Slattery inclusion, which was, I remember being there in 2013 being like, excuse me? Like, you took Iron Man's biggest foe, and it's Guy Pearce now with some dragon tattoos. Like, what are we doing here? And then Shang-Chi, we were there together, and he's there purely for comedic purposes. But what's so the irony of this character specifically in Wonder Man, and like we'll get to Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, because this guy's just incredible in everything.
Regardless of the
no, never. And what's so lost and I found so funny is people are like, why is Ben Kingsley playing this? Well, you're getting a Academy Award winning actor to play somebody whose life has been dedicated to this art form, but you're not really sure if he's actually any good. Like, was the drug habit really the thing that threw his life down the tube, or was it talent? And all of the connections to this, it's so funny to me, because I know something, and we've talked about this. We've been having conversations the entire length of the DC, another DC, the Disney Plus era of these major franchises, Star Wars being another one, that they might have ruined the brand recognition or the value of that, and wanting things to feel prestige. This is Disney. You're putting money into these things. And what I liked so much about Wonder Man, and I mentioned this in my review, was that while this is obviously a Marvel show, it's so funny to me that I've said this so many times, but what we love about these characters and what gets us invested in them as kids, as comic book readers, and then as viewers of the movies, were we care about the characters in the stories. And when things devolve from that sentiment, you get sort of grandiose just for the sake of, which was a lot of what we've gotten in the multiverse saga. This story is so small, but such a great reflection of what we love about the Marvel world, where you get big swings, like essentially the equivalency of the Sokovia Accords, but in the acting world, which I didn't really know how essential this was going to be to the plot, but you get the duality of Simon, somebody who's clearly got issues dealing with, he has these abilities where if he's any other person, dude, just become a superhero. But Simon loves the arts. He wants to be an actor. And I don't think this show works unless you have Ben Kingsley giving one of my favorite performances he's ever given, because you get to see the duality in who Trevor is as a person. You see the performer, somebody who is also looking for their big break in their career. And I'm glad this show wasn't what a lot of us probably assumed it was going to be, which was the meta commentary on superhero films and remakes and comic books and how they've ruined the theatrical genre. I mean, this wasn't going to be a Martin Scorsese. He was in the studio instead making a Kool-Aid movie about people being murdered. But in this instance, it's about what the art form means to these people and their different points of view, which is something that is abundantly clear if you're ever inside these productions. But getting a much more personal story felt so refreshing, especially in the multiverse saga, where I just haven't cared about very many things.
You touched on a few cool things. The meta commentary element when it comes to superhero movies, I love that they don't even dive into that. They just play it straight. Like this, and this dives into another point I want to talk about, which is the thing that seems to catch me most with certain superhero related tales is the family element. And we get to meet Simon's family for sure, but there's these flashbacks when he's a kid with his dad, and there's a moment where his dad takes him out of school and recognizes he's different in more ways than one. And that fuels his love, just like you and I grew up reading the books and watching the animation and now loving and now podcasting about this very thing. This is kind of Simon's own version of that. He's just an artist in a different way. I love that just like Trevor has so many vices and problems, and he's such a weak, weak person until he has this moment where he finally, after all these years, changes and does something right for someone. Every time he's threatened, he's like, oh, yeah, I'll do whatever you say. And then he actually throws everything away to do the right thing. And it's like that's why I say it's this redemption arc for him in so many ways. It plays through the episodes. But the family stuff is so powerful, and the leads, I love how they treat the Wonder Man as this 80s, like, you know, sci-fi romp. It's perfect. And it would have played so well in the marketing had this been a different era of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and fandom's feelings about it. And I love they're making a modern telling of it. It's cool, but I love that they just play it straight. It's just a cool creative way to address it. And it's just a background element. But the other part of it is I love that Simon, like Trevor, very flawed. Like he self admits like he's a loner. Obviously, he has trouble with relationships. He's he doesn't care. He doesn't remember people's names on set. And him learning the reverse way Trevor's learning, the way they unlock things in each other, is kind of beautiful. And I think I can't emphasize that buddy element enough, because it's actually a lot deeper than that, especially when you throw in the layers of family. And then the Trevor side, the layers of his history that we've seen on screen in the MCU, and then in the background of the character and the lore that they're building or revealing layers of to the audience. So very cool mechanics. The writing, pretty spot on. And you couple the writing and the comedic sensibilities with high quality direction. They took this material so seriously. It's kind of, not to use a pun, it's kind of wonderful this exists in a way. So I hope, I know I say it's not something you have to watch now, but a year from now, I hope there's a conversation, or less than a year from now, that this is kind of award worthy. It should be in the discussion for TV awards, because it's actually that good if you just ignore the Marvel of it all and the Disney Plus of it all, which is such a weird thing to say going into 2026. You know?
Yeah, I think it's frustrating that that's the case, that that caveat feels almost essential. But in terms of the straight narrative of how they don't play into the meta commentary, obviously this wouldn't be shocking to anybody who's listening to this or follows anything on Screen Rant. Like, I really enjoyed the progression and the overall journey of the show. And that's, to me, what made this so interesting, being such a small microcosmic story in the grand world of the MCU. Like, the outs, you can pull the connections, like damage control, and Trevor could have just committed some other crime. Like, it didn't necessarily need to be, terrorism. But getting to follow along with this artist, and it's become more and more part of the public identity when following these projects, thinking about leading up to Superman 2025, and knowing about the casting for that. And that was a large part of the marketing of Superman, was how did they find David Cornsweet? And getting to see that within the Marvel universe is certainly super funny, because you're getting to see inside the Marvel machine, but it's about the Marvel machine. So that level of meta-ness, it's not winking at the camera the whole time. That's what Deadpool and Wolverine are for, specifically Deadpool, of course. And the journey of somebody trying to achieve something from the arts as opposed to stardom, like, that's clearly not what Simon's about. It's, he loves that IP, and you brought up his dad taking him to it and loving Wonder Man as a character. And the 70s, 80s look of that is just so perfect. It's not Star Trek from the 60s, like TOS. It's like a slightly evolved version of that, given the timeline, it would have to be.
Yeah, I was going to say a little Flash Gordon vibes a little bit, but it is more modern than that. But you're right. It definitely has that aesthetic, though. I want to call out one thing you said. I think you said you used the phrase microcosmic, like look at the sort of MCU. Mm-hmm. I want to applaud the show for the use of restraint with the Marvel of it all. Like, there's not, there's no like Avengers cameos and this and that. It's like, it's not bleeding into any of the other Marvel lore. Like I said that up front, where this doesn't need Marvel to exist for what its core themes and character stories are. I love that restraint with the Marvel side of it. We talked about the meta nature of the superhero film genre. It plays that straight as well. Great restraint, because they could have gone She-Hulk and have Kevin Feige robot at the end. You know what I mean? Like, this is,
Does that technically still exist?
Don't even get me started on that and the Skrulls and the multiverse of it all. I don't know what's going on. I don't think they do either. We'll see come Secret Wars. But also a big nod for being restrained on the cameo front. They had pretty creative selections on that. Like, there's a little bit of Ashley Green from Twilight fame in the beginning. You got my man, Joe Pantoliano, who plays a wonderful version of himself. Amazing chemistry with Trevor Slattery. And of course, arguably Olaf an himself. All-timer performance by Josh Gad, carrying an episode in the most unexpected of ways.
But just the creativity of that, because like we mentioned, I mentioned the Sokovia Accords, and it's briefly in the trailer where it's like, sign that you're not a super abled person. And in the trailer, it's like, why is this the case? And the show goes, hey, we're just going to tell you, we're going to give you a short film all about the doorman.
Yeah, one whole episode I thought my TV was broken when I was playing because it was black and white,
black
right?
And white,
like,
yep.
It was like, I thought something was wrong with my screener. I'm like, is this? And the character was different. I'm like, wait a second, is this a flashback? But the whole episode until the last minute is played straight as like a black and white. Like you said, it's like almost like it's a wonderful, hilarious short film explaining Doorman's origin, which is so outlandish and hilarious.
Josh Gad in the MCU is currently missing. He still has not returned.
Yeah,
which means that the MCU Frozen 3 can't happen because Josh Gad is missing.
I almost think this whole gimmick of the Doorman and Josh Gad, if they just like that would have been a wonderful marketing campaign. Like what happened?
Wait, have you seen Josh Gad?
Yeah, have you seen Josh? But like also what also the real life, their version of real life Josh Gad, like really funny and I kind of like no.
It's like Seth Green from the Entourage, like, where he's like such a horrible person.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. But he's trying to be cool and he's got his all his access and he has his posse and then brilliant. Very well done. I guess we are full spoilers.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But I wish I was in the writer's room for that, where they pitched like the doorman's ability and what happens and how they use it. Like the laughs they must have had to play that straight and just do it. So that's like obviously the most comedic element of the whole show. There's lots of bits with like Trevor Slattery character moments and
the
Von Kovac of it all.
In Doorman, though, there's a rocks. It's a Roxxon Easter egg.
There is.
Is Spider-Man the
garbage can. Isn't there the garbage cans at a Roxxon?
Which is a Spider-Man reference, which I was like, we're allowed to use this? Okay.
No, if I remember correctly, Roxxon was in like Iron Man movies as well. Like Roxxon, Roxxon
right,
oil.
Right.
It's sort of been referenced in the background for quite a while. I believe it's also in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that. So yeah, I remember that being a thing back when I had time to write about Marvel stuff. We were like, oh, Easter eggs, Roxxon, what's that mean? And like, Hammer Industries and all this kind of stuff, you know.
Justin Hammer could have been a great cameo in this show. That would have been fantastic.
It's totally in the vein of that character. Yep. And if somehow this connected to Armor Wars, which doesn't seem to be happening, they would have had everything there to do something really funny.
Spoilers. War Machine will not return.
How
did you feel? Because it definitely plays with the Trevor we're familiar with. And I think that is where I was on the fence the entire time. Like, we're in full spoilers, because the resolution on that is something that if not enough people watch this, again, we talked about this doesn't need to be Marvel, but I'm going to be talking out of both sides of my mouth, because sitting with knowing this character for 13 years, I said in my review, maybe the most hated MCU twist of all time. And I'm going to jump to the finale, and then if you want to go back, we can. But the fact that the get out of jail free card for Simon is Trevor recreating a Mandarin viral video. I'm watching it by myself. Disney, I followed my NDA. And I was losing my mind because the voice was back. He's got the sunglasses doing the walk. It was so perfect. And that is where, when you are a longtime Marvel fan and you're just like, Trevor's being Trevor, like, acting, you just breathe. And like, that's just all great. That's just all great. And it matters because it does bond. Simon is a genuine fan of Trevor and all of that stuff's so great. But getting to see Trevor, like, he's doing this for him. He's doing this for him. And you have those moments. It is a convention third act betrayal or second act betrayal. Oh, I don't trust you anymore. But the Mandarin coming onto screen and just saying the bombing in Hollywood, like in Burbank. Oh, it's so perfect.
Yeah. Calling it Hollywood for being part of the brainwashing machine of it all. Right. So very brilliant. And they put a lot of groundwork into developing that moment. There's a lot of flashback scenes to how Trevor Slattery first got cast as the Mandarin pre Iron Man 3. I mean, the show sort of early begins in the first act with him being caught at the airport and multiple times he's questioned of how did you get out of prison again from the All Hail the King short, and it's like, are you supposed to serve that time still, what's the deal, and are you working for the government, and it comes up here and here. So they play a lot with that Marvel history. So of course, if you are a fan, I think most people who watch this by default will have to be. I don't know how they're going to market this otherwise. I mean, it's called Wonder Man at the Marvel logo. It's a very tough sell. It's a shame because it deserves to be seen even by people who have given up. But really cool work, good play. And of course, the reason why he's doing that is the most powerful moment where he's finally turned the switch and he's going to make the ultimate sacrifice to protect Simon. Wonderful moment. It's how do you feel about them sort of rushing after that? We see the prison and we see Simon become who we know him as from the comics, but it's only for a split second just to kind of end cap and undo the sacrifice. It's sort of like, oh yeah, fans, we know what you want. Here's that moment.
Yeah.
Does it mean anything? I don't know.
I've already mentioned Entourage, so I think this is an apt comparison. The actual journey to getting the movie, as somebody who loves, again, I said this, all the behind the scenes stuff, that is to me the successful part of the show, because it feels they're like, okay, they got the movie, boom, everything hits the fan, and we've got to explain like how we get out of this, which is a little annoying. Like, we barely see him in the costume, right? The most we know about the movie is him trying to figure out the sunglasses and winds up getting the original ones from the 1980s film. And then obviously he loses his mind, or Simon loses control. And that's been a perpetual part of the entire show, right? He has no control over his abilities and they're baked into who he is emotionally. And every time
he doesn't know how powerful he really is. Nobody really.
Cause he breaks the table, he cracks the wall, and then he blows up a studio in Burbank. And then the movie comes out after Trevor has, of course, and they recast Trevor's character with Joel Pantoliano. Doesn't work at all. Like, it could have been.
No, he's so awful on screen. Yeah.
But that was comical. But again, we don't really see any of the movie. Similar to Entourage, the only thing we see of Vincent Chase is him running down a dock in Aquaman.
Sorry, continue that thought. I just forgot something, but I want to bring it up after.
And
go ahead.
We don't. We get to see the movie's premiere. And episode 8 does kind of feel like an e-brake on the whole momentum, because for, I think it's like 35 minutes of the 38, Simon's just like following this random dude. What is happening? Because there's no like 2 months. I think there maybe is a time jump actually. And he's just following this guy and you're just following this guy. It felt like he was in a Soderbergh movie without any of the fun cuts or music. And it's just sort of trudging. Oh, it's damage control. Oh, he's going to break him out. I can fly now. Like that part's sort of fun, but it like overall, it sort of was like, oh, okay, we're in a different show now.
It's weird because on paper, as we say it out loud, focusing on that 8th episode moment, it sounds like the same gripe people have so many other Disney Marvel shows where it's like, oh, you watch 8 episodes and at the end he finally becomes the character.
It's a Netflix thing is what it was.
Yeah, it's like, actually kind of true, certainly. Yeah, that was early Daredevil, you know, grounded MCU heroes thing. But it's also a little bit like, you know, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you finally see Sam pick up Cap and get the new costume at the very, very end. And even Moon Knight fully unleashes at the very, very end. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I feel like if they didn't do that, fans would just gripe. But also, if it's hard to say, Marvel has no vision on Disney Plus, so who knows what's gonna happen. I say Vision, there's a Vision show coming out.
Vision Quest.
Yeah. Vision Quest is a great name for it, actually, if they went with that. And it fits the WandaVision theming. Mm-hmm. The one thing I totally forgot, and it's kind of a very important character trait and development track for Simon Williams, is how insecure he is. There's a big subplot of this in the second act of the show where there's a high profile, I think the New York Times, a New Yorker reporter coming in to do a profile on Simon, thinks it's for him, but realizes it's for both of them. And Simon wants Trevor to help him out so he can hide his secret. And then Simon, because of his insecurity, his lack of confidence, his constant conflict and inability to be fully socially functional with his brother and his friends and his ex-girlfriend, he thinks everyone's out to get him. Everyone's going to say something bad about him. It's going to ruin his entire life and 10 years of acting failures to get the dream job. And it's going to go out the window because he never gets along with his brother, or he had a really tough relationship with his ex-girlfriend. And it turns out every single one of these people in his life actually said nothing but amazing things about him. And that was such a fun way to play with the audience. We think he's screwed too. We think, oh my gosh, how's he going to cover this up? And it's not about that at all. They're out for Trevor the whole time. So that kind of back and forth playing with the audience emotions, there's a bit of tension there, which I completely forgot about until we started talking about the sort of the end of the show. That was very well handled. And I love how that slingshot effect is, like, oh, Simon is wrong. Trevor was wrong. Trevor's got to sacrifice. Simon's got to make up for it. And I think it's all the linchpin moment of that. The turning point is when he goes to the bar and meets with his ex-girlfriend, the way his ex-girlfriend, that scene played out not at all like I would expect. It was just like the family flashbacks of Simon and his father. There was like a lot of heart there, those little moments. And that's not lost on me because there's a lot of that in the show too. So that was a kind of a cool wrench they threw into the whole story towards the end of the second act there that sort of sets up what the ending of the show really is about, right?
Yeah, and ultimately he finds this meaningful connection for the first time. That's sort of a theme throughout the entire show. Like, he's had his issues with his brother. Obviously, we see the connection he has with his dad, but things obviously changed once the fire and his dad passed away, and then his progression into wanting to become an actor. And what I like so much about this show is they do need each other. It's not one of those instances where you sort of have like the comedic lackey who doesn't really serve a purpose, where Trevor needs Simon, obviously, for get out of literal jail free card. And Simon needs Trevor because his method towards acting, ironically using the word method, is to take things much more naturally, as opposed to what we see from Simon that throws it quite literally a wrench into his success in his American Horror Story episode. Is he's overthinking everything and just needs to relax and say the words on the page the way that you would say them, ultimately getting him the role. And I liked sort of the web of creativity from I forgot his name. What is it again? Von Kovac. When we go into his and he's so weird. He's so weird and all of his different inspirations. And I think it's really funny because having watched as much Marvel behind the scenes as I have, there are elements to the way that they show you the costumes and the way it's sort of, here's what we're thinking, and ignore whose head is in the picture, because that's not the guy that we ultimately cast in the role, is really fun. And getting to see the insecurities, because it's, I mean, ironic because I just reviewed Mercy and they want to make him a flawed character in that. But I think he's really unlikable in Mercy, quite frankly. So his success doesn't really matter if I don't care about him. But in this, you're put on the ground with Simon and Trevor and getting to see how they prop each other up, quite literally, and leads Trevor into that thing we've talked about. But Simon really falling into this kind of by accident, but it's his motivation that shows what kind of person he can be. And what would lead us to believe what kind of hero he can be. The saddest part is, unless he is, I have not been able to get this out of my head since we brought up Doorman. What if in Secret Wars, instead of portals, it's just people jumping through Doorman on a hill somewhere?
You know what? At this point, I'm down for it. Why not?
Yeah,
it's just a bunch of Skrull characters coming out of him.
Reviewed Secret Invasion. Man. That was super fun. I remember that. That was, yeah, we did.
Oh, man. I've kind of wiped that from my mind. I can't escape the memes of poor Amelia Clark. Stupid Drax arm. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, with the tattoos, which totally makes sense, biologically speaking. I think it's unfortunate that this is going to get dumped.
It is. I think timing is because these are like dumped projects left over from an expired plan. You know what I mean? I think when they were full gung-ho Disney Plus and they were doing Armor Wars as a Disney Plus type thing, you had to have Ironheart build off of Black Panther 2 to set up Armor Wars, but then it all just kind of fell apart after that, so they just kind of threw it out there. And Echo, again, that thing was like, I feel like that was a 10 episode season. They just cut a bunch of it out because it wasn't working, and there was a lot of documented reporting about problems with that, and they kind of reshot elements of it. So again, if they were going more grounded, which they kind of are, but now with Daredevil and stuff like that, it's weird. Again, I it's hard for me to understand. I do not know if there is a vision of where these characters are and plots are going, which is the the problem across the board that also applies to Star Wars, which you alluded to earlier. As for the release schedule, this, given Disney Plus's, you know, status and then the Marvel status, it just wouldn't work weekly.
No,
I think Amazon has been absolutely freaking out about viewership on Fallout season two because they trained audiences of season one to dump the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Season two was dropped weekly, and so all the reporting is like, oh, minutes watched are down. Well, it's like, yeah, they had eight episodes versus one, of course minutes are down. And then they again changed the time just today for the last two episodes. They're going to play it earlier. They're playing it essentially primetime weekday evenings.
Oh, I didn't
know. They've gone back to what network TV was 20 years ago. But they realized, oh my gosh, yeah, TV scheduling works. If you want to do it weekly, you have to put it on in prime time. Otherwise, nobody's going to watch it. It's not eventized. So what is the point of a weekly schedule at this point? It's like we're subscribing to the service. We get the story. You watch it at your own pace. If I wasn't watching Wonder Man weekly, I would not watch it. If I was watching it weekly, I just wouldn't. It's not enough there to sustain me for 30 minutes and then go back to watch five other shows that are playing weekly and then come back to it in a week. It's like, it's not that kind of show.
No, it's not.
At least the way my brain's been trained now, so much premium TV content with these ongoing stories. I kind of want to see the story complete and then move on to the next thing. I don't want to go back and forth between Fallout, another Seven Kingdoms, and then, you know, Wonder Man. It's like, I want to finish my book and move on to the next one. That's just me because I have six subscription services and every one of these subscription services every month has some show as of note, right?
Well, we are in the fortunate circumstance where a lot of these shows, we don't have to watch them week by week. So that does certainly affect the viewing experience.
No, you're right in terms of reviewing a season like this. Mm-hmm. However, on my side, when in terms of like content planning, like we are doing weekly episodic reviews and weekly episodic features. So I do have to think about it that way a little bit. For my own viewing pleasure, for sure. It's like one binge to the next. I like to finish my stories and go to the next one. I hate reading chapters of 10 different books.
So with comic books, though, because I know the book analogy you've used on the show before, would you be like, I'm only reading, I'm only reading Absolute Batman right now. So I'm going to read one of those.
It's a good question.
Or were you multiple issues? Like for me right now, I'm a little behind on. But with the Ultimate comics I'm reading, like Ultimate Black Panther, The Ultimates, Ultimate Spider-Man, you'd love the Ultimate Hawkeye one-off. It was sick. Awesome. It's really, really cool. And Ultimate Endgame just started. So I'm reading all of those when they come out.
Yeah, look, now, because I'd be playing catch-up, I'd love to read trades. I took trades, I mean, when I was flying. Every time, years ago, going to these set visits, I'd reread the trades. It's packaged nicely. Mm-hmm. I like collecting and displaying hardcovers, which have 12 issues usually. And then I love the 6-issue trades. It's just a great magazine read. Plus it feels more complete. Mm-hmm. One issue of a comic, whether it's varying size, 24 pages, whatever it is, it's not a lot of content. Now, when I was using the Marvel app hardcore, like when my first kid was just a baby, I'd be doing your way. I'd have every new Marvel release and some key DC releases on that Wednesday in the app. I would just power through like issue. And that was my story update of the Marvel Comics universe for that week, and it's like 10 different stories or whatever, and it is what it is. But no, for now, if I do very intentional, it's all about intent. So I'm gonna sit down and read a story. I'm gonna read that
you read like the six of the trade or whatever. Okay.
Yeah. Or like you said, obviously the exception I shouldn't even bring up is I'm planning for something, so I'll try to get the whole issues of the thing and plan for it accordingly. But yeah, that's just how I consume content now because of the amount of different content on different platforms. There has to be so much more intent, and as a consumer, so much more satisfaction. I want a complete experience. I just don't have time otherwise. You know what I mean? That's the biggest thing everybody's vying for now. We talked about before recording, trying to organize schedules of theater times. I think theaters are really killing themselves, not because of all the concessions and quality of seats and this and that. For me, it's just time.
Yep.
I can watch a movie whenever I want at home. I cannot get to the theater on the one time of night they play the movie I want. You know
yes, what I mean? I did want to tell you something that the theory that I've come up with that I think kind of addresses that. So we're done our Wonder Man spoilers. You've heard them all. I don't really think we have anything else to dive into with that. Do you? No.
Okay. No. Go watch it. It's top three MCU TV show.
Okay. That was the question I was going to ask you. So, I mean, it feels like we're kind of in the home stretch of what is Marvel TV. So do you have a top three? Like in no particular order, if you have one, that would be helpful, but
I think I do. Okay. I could put on. I've definitely in the top three right now. It comes to mind, and I could be forgetting something. But in terms of sheer quality front to back, it's Loki season two. I still think that's like absolute prestige TV. That's the only show Disney Marvel has put out that can compete with like the prestige
is
shows.
That number three, would you say?
No, number one.
Loki number one. Two. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I might put Wonder Man number two right now.
Okay.
And then I put, this is a weird one, but Marvel Zombies number three. It completely succeeds in what it's trying to do. And I don't even like that. You know, that show could have not existed. I wouldn't even care. But when I watched it, it perfectly did what it was trying to do. Perfectly. And I was like totally, and I do not like What If very much at all. But the Marvel Zombies story on its own, you know, it's What If style tale, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it fully accomplished what it was trying to do, and it nailed it. And there's other shows I like. You and I talked about are like for Miss Marvel, and I liked WandaVision, but like half that show or a couple episodes of the show got not just bad, but sometimes terrible. And it's like, I just can't, you know, I love Hawkeye, but there were some really goofy things, and they really missed the mark on some of it. Some of it was excellent. And then obviously the early MCU D+ shows, there's a lot of mid type storytelling. So I think off the bat, those are my three. How about you?
You know what's the saddest? I'm scrolling through the list and I'm like,
yeah, but it's like, you know, I like bits of Moon Knight, but it didn't satisfy, you know. Count Werewolf by Night, also very
that
solid.
Is, right? I watch that every that Halloween now. I've watched it every Halloween.
Why are they giving us Halloween Marvel
or a Christmas special? Like, Doctor Who's not doing it anymore. Wouldn't they do Disney. That?
Shouldn't that be a Halloween event on Disney Plus? Watch your Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors. Watch the Marvel Horse. Yeah. There's so many amazing monster type characters. Or just bring back Werewolf by Night and, you know, Man Thing, whatever.
All right. Oh, boy. Okay. I think I would have to go with, I don't even like, so the problem is what they've made. I would say, I think Loki season three.
Wait, three.
Or season three. Season two say, would something? Be my, no, that's a doomsday. Spoilers. Yeah, that would be my number three. Wonder Man would be number two. And even though, to quote our friend Kofi Outlaw, it is Frankenstein, but I really did like Daredevil Born Again season one.
Yeah, it just felt too incomplete to me compared to the Netflix shows. And, you know, you can see this.
No, that's true.
I love the character. I think Charlie Cox is one of the best things in superheroes.
He's on the MCU Mount Rushmore.
100%. He's perfect.
Like, people wouldn't put him
there. But
that
story just is like, you have Daredevil season three, and then you have Born Again's like trying to be part of that. It's like, you know, not even close. And also, the worst storytelling for Punisher ever. Like, they completely made set like a nonsensical ending of him. Yeah.
Season two, I have high hopes.
I hope so too. Because doing it proper, they're so invested. Yep. You know, Vincent and Charlie get it, and this is they're starting the right foot from the beginning this time, versus trying to retroactively improve something, which was a total disaster. So,
and it better just be Devil's Reign, Disney, because that's what people want. Yeah. Rob, thank you so much for coming back onto the show. It's I know you're incredibly busy, so I appreciate your time. Where can people find you?
Oh, you can. I still am finding time to write when I pull an all-nighter, which I'm too old to do these days, on screenrant.com. And you can follow me on X, Rob_Keyes. That's KEYES. And I'm at FailCube on the other stuff. Google it, or just Google my name. You'll find it.
Rob is on all the things, usually in very cool places, traveling all around the world. If you didn't listen to the earlier episode this week, next week's episode is going to be my thoughts on Shrinking Season 3. I'm incredibly excited for that show. It fills the Ted Lasso hole in my life, and I'm glad Ted Lasso's definitely not coming back. I'm kidding. It is, and I don't know why. Money is usually the answer. But if you didn't hear the question of the week already, I will reiterate it here. Outside of Indiana Jones and Star Wars, what is your favorite Harrison Ford performance? To answer, you can email the podcast, filmrealistpod@gmail.com, or you can answer directly on YouTube and Spotify. I look at all the answers, and make sure you're following the podcast on your preferred podcast platform. If you haven't done that yet, you're maybe to miss a special episode like this one. Rob, thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you for having me, man. It was fun.
We talk about Marvel things, and then, you know, there's a couple Marvel movies coming out. Maybe they'll do well. Who's to say? We have no idea. None at all. But there's a lot of stuff coming out this week, so make sure you're following the Film Realist so you don't miss any of it. My name is Kyle Naranya, and I will see you next.